It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The White House is acknowledging that President Trump did in fact weigh in as a father on his son Don Jr.'s statement regarding the meeting with a Russian lawyer during the campaign, a revelation that contradicts a previous statement by the president's attorney that Mr. Trump played no role in this statement. Here's how Sarah Huckabee Sanders put it yesterday.
The statement that Don Jr. issued is true. There's no inaccuracy in the statement. The president weighed in as any father would based on the limited information that he had. The Democrats want to continue to use this as a PR stunt. The president, the American people, they voted America first, not Russia first, and that's the focus of our administration.
In the White House's frustration with the media's constant focus on Russia didn't stop at the podium, senior advisor Kellyanne Conway had this to say to Bret Baier last night.
I was the campaign manager for the winning part of the campaign, and if I needed negative information about Hillary Clinton, I looked no further than Hillary Clinton. You certainly didn't need to go to Moscow.
And as you mentioned, this comes as Attorney General Jeff Sessions is set to announce a major crackdown on leaks as early as Friday, an issue that the White House believes undermines its administration. Some leaks, of course, involving classified information. It's a frustration that the president has tweeted about in recent weeks, but Fox News is told the announcement by Sessions has been in the works for some time and is more of an overview of the Department of Justice's plan to address the barrage of leaks rather than an announcement of specific prosecutions. Although this week, Sessions says that some people may need to go to jail.
All right, if you'd been up at 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time this morning, you would have heard that report from Griff Jenkins. But since you probably weren't, I played it for you. Sandy Rios with you on this Wednesday morning. And, of course, I spent quite at least some amount of time yesterday. I think the Washington Post wrote 9 pages on the revelation that Donald Trump had helped pen the statement by Donald Trump Jr. in response to the discovery of him meeting with this Russian attorney connected to Fusion GPS, who looks like they were working with the Democrats. And yes, it was a discussion about Russian adoption. It was discussion about repealing the Magnitsky Act. And on it goes. You remember that meeting? 9 pages about that. And of course, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. What are they accusing the president of doing? It was brought to his attention that his son was going to be in the hot seat for this meeting. So he lends his advice to the statement that Don Jr. makes, and that's the crime. And as you heard Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, the statement that Don Jr. made initially was true. You know, they did not spell out everything, and perhaps they should have. You could argue that. But that doesn't mean the statement's false. It's really a non-story, but that's what the press is doing every single day. So today, here's the big one. This is by AP. Ready? Here's the story today on the, you know, something to demean and diminish President Donald Trump. And here it is. A report says that Trump called the White House a dump. He allegedly did this with his buddies in New Jersey at some golf club. And so now they're printing that President Trump says the White House is a dump. I could imagine he probably might say that. The White House is a very old house, and he's used to a great amount of luxury. He is, after all, a billionaire. And probably if you were to go into the bathrooms of the White House now or hear the creaky floors or see what it's like after, I'm just going to say it, after 8 years with the Obamas. Remember the people that paraded through there? I mean, pop stars, drug addicts, you know, some people were good that went through there, no question about it. But I'm sure the White House probably is not too, is kind of sagging under the load of everything and under the load of 200 and some years of existence. So that's the shocking report of Donald Trump today. And this isn't interesting little tweet that I saw yesterday. And here's what it says. There's a total mainstream media blackout on Democrat Senator Bob Menendez from Florida. He has a 22-count corruption bribery trial, which is scheduled to start September 6th. Have you heard anything about that? Anything about that at all? You also haven't heard much about this total scandal, and it's worse than a scandal. It's a national security risk, and there are some really bad things happening in the House centering around Debbie Wasserman Schultz and these IT guys from Pakistan. But you're not hearing anything about it. In fact, I want to stop just for a second and to I've told you this story before, but I think the Daily Caller has a great article this morning by Peter Hessen that kind of reviews it. And I want to do that if I can with you. Besides, we'll put this article on our Facebook page. GOP Rep House IT Scandal Among All-Time Congressional Scandals of the Last 30 Years. Ron DeSantis reporting to the Free Beacon. He says, this might be in the Free Beacon, sorry, instead of Daily Caller. The FBI arrested one of Democratic Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz's top IT aides, Imran Awan, on bank fraud charges last week. Now, hang on a second. Let me just say right up front, that's just the initial, that's the reason they were able to arrest him. Trust me, that's just a scratching of the surface. Bank fraud is not the deepest problem here, but I digress. Imran Awan, on bank fraud charges last week as he attempted to flee the country to Pakistan, where he had recently wired almost $300,000. Awan and several of his family members who worked for dozens of House Democrats are suspected of stealing computers and improperly accessing and transferring House members' computer files. And what the details don't say there is they worked for the Intelligence Committee. They worked for all the high-level committees. I've had others tell me that they had access to every House members' computers. To make this story short, it looks as though it's likely, it's possible, because they made in the multiple millions of dollars as a family from your tax dollars working as IT workers in the House. It looks as though there may have been some bribery here. There's a suggestion that they may have had some dirt on Democrats and that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, even after the report came that they were being investigated, would not fire them. And they were making incredible amounts of money, more than anybody makes. Maybe, I'm not sure. This is me guessing because I don't see the breakdown in front of me. Perhaps even more than the congressmen themselves. I'm not sure, but it's really, really a ridiculous amount of money. Millions of dollars in taxpayer funds for their work as IT staffers for Democratic congressional members. Members of the House, they had their schedules. They had all this information. They had access to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's computer, which, as you can imagine, had a lot of... Remember that the Democratic National Committee would not allow the FBI even to go into their email. Well, I'm sure that these Awan brothers had access to... It seems likely they had access to all of that. So this is a huge scandal. Remember Debbie Wasserman Schultz reamed the head of the D.C. police, the Capitol Police, threatened him to return the equipment. Now we're learning that the FBI is actually going to be able to recover. They had smashed all this equipment. Now they're going to be able to recover Imran Awan's equipment and kind of find out what it is they know. This is a real big scandal, but you're not hearing about it, are you? I want to take just a second to play another clip from Sarah Huckabee Sanders from yesterday's press conference, because Sarah, in referring to what's not being said in the media about Russia, said this.
If you want to talk further about a relationship with Russia, look no further than the Clintons. As we've said time and time again, Bill Clinton was paid $500,000 to give a speech to a Russian bank and was personally thanked by Putin for it. Hillary Clinton allowed one-fifth of America's uranium to reserve to be sold to a Russian firm whose investors were Clinton Foundation donors. If you guys want to talk about having relations, which you seem obsessed with doing, look no further than there. If you want to talk about somebody who's actually been tough on Russia, look at President Trump. He wants more fracking, more coal, more energy, a stronger military, a stronger defense. Those things aren't good for Russia. I think the distinctions are very clear, and you guys want to create a narrative that just doesn't exist.
Yeah, go Sarah. And it's true. I mean, it's not just a partisan yippee. It's really true what she's saying. This is just madness. And just this morning from Reuters, former Justice Department official joins Mueller team. Bob Mueller, the special counsel, has now appointed lawyer number 16 to join his team. It's Greg Andres. He's a former member of the he served the Justice Department from 2010 to 2012, and goes on to talk about what he's done and actually his work. He was a graduate of Notre Dame. He worked as a federal prosecutor in Brooklyn. He's married to Ronnie Abrams, a U.S. district judge in Manhattan. So, in other words, you know, he's gay. So and they have an axe to grind against Trump. And, of course, he has long Democratic ties, which I didn't even go into. So that's the 16th hire of Bob Mueller. I have to tell you that people that great legal minds, even on the left, I have to be careful. Jonathan Turley, I'm not sure. He used to be considered on the left. I'm not sure anymore. He just seems like a truthful law professor. But Bill Otis wrote recently this: Mueller is too close to Comey to be impartial, and that violates Justice Department conflict of interest rules. Comey and Mueller have been friends for nearly 15 years. They were partners in the episode that defined Comey's professional persons more than any other in his public service. It would be surprising if it had not also forged a permanent bond with Mueller. Comey now finds himself at the center of the Russian investigation over which Mueller presides. Questions swirl around Comey about whether the president wanted, hinted, hoped, asked, directed, or something else, the investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn to be stopped, abandoned, slowed, soft-pedaled, or something else. This is probably the central element of the obstruction of justice case that Trump opponents would like to see made against him. Questions also swirl about Comey's notes about this conversation and why he gave them to a private individual from Columbia Law to convey to journalists. Additional questions have arisen about why his curious and seemingly devious means of putting the contents of the notes in the public domain, leaking, in other words, was designed specifically to bring about the appointment of the special counsel outside the president's direct reach, and indeed whether Comey wanted, expected, or intended his friend Mueller to get the job. And so many legal minds are saying Mueller must recuse himself. The statute itself says that you can't be investigating something where you have a close personal relationship with the object of the investigation, which in some parts is Comey. He's a key to the so-called, they think, obstruction of justice case. So, by the way, Judicial Watch is suing. They got three lawsuits seeking communications between FBI Acting Director Andrew McCabe and also with the Democrats in Virginia. So there's more to that than I just gave you the headline. So there are pushbacks. But right now, I'm telling you, that's a very dangerous thing for Donald Trump. It's very dangerous. And that's why he was so upset with Jeff Sessions last week. There's no question about it. I'm hoping that they have patched things out up. And it looks like General Sessions is going to be making a statement about his investigations into these leaks. So we'll find out more about that. Venezuela. Well, this was the report yesterday. I want you to hear it because it sets up our next segment with our guest. This was over the weekend. Let's listen to clip 9.
10 people were killed Sunday in clashes between protesters and government security forces in Venezuela. One candidate was murdered in his home, and several motorcycle police officers were burned in what may have been the first use of an improvised explosive device in 4 months of unrest. When the blast went off, some on the street cheered. 20 years of socialism have taken the country with the world's largest oil reserves to the brink of dictatorship and famine. Those who can flee. There are people close to me who pick through the garbage, she says. People dressed like you and me. It affects us all. The man in charge, Nicolas Maduro, a high school dropout and former bus driver, appears to relish the battle. When imperialism challenges us, he says, we show the blood of the liberator that runs through the veins of our men, women, and children.
All right, that's Steve Harrigan. That's just a partial report. And it's a dreadful situation, as you know. I've been covering this. We've been talking about it a lot. So joining me next, because two men were just arrested, pulled out of their beds yesterday. Heaven only knows what their fate is going to be. We're going to talk about that with Paul and what's going on right now in Venezuela.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
The faithful servant of Mary. You know, whatever was required of Mary, she was prepared to do. You know, God chose some pretty incredible people to do his work. Moses, Abraham, Elijah, Gideon, and Mary. The list goes on and on. You know, God has also chosen us. See, Mary adjusted her entire lifestyle to accomplish the awesome work of God. I wonder, are we willing to adjust our lifestyles to accomplish some of God's work?
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I've realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
The St. Louis Cardinals have been hosting Christian Day for 3 decades now, a night for church groups to come out to Busch Stadium, watch some baseball, eat some popcorn, and hear a Christian message. The Cards host similar nights for all sorts of groups, Catholic Family Night, Bosnian Heritage Night, and for the first time, the Cards are hosting a Pride Night for members of the LGBT community. But instead of celebrating, St. Louis Pride is upset over the guest speaker for Christian Day. Former Cardinal Lance Berkman, scheduled to speak, he came under fire from LGBT groups over his opposition to a transgender bathroom bill. Berkman said he would not want teenage boys who identify as girls to shower alongside his daughters. Pride St. Louis called those remarks divisive and demeaning. But the Cardinals are sticking by Berkman, and in doing so, are demonstrating true tolerance and diversity. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro said he had jail cells ready for his enemies after Sunday's vote. Now he has filled two of them. 62-year-old Antonio Ledezma was still in his pajamas when masked security forces entered his home after midnight. He briefly tried to resist as his daughter screamed dictatorship. Both Ledezma and Leopoldo Lopez are former mayors of Caracas. Both were under house arrest, and both called for opposition to Maduro's plan to rewrite the Constitution. Now both are in military prison. The arrests come in the wake of Sunday's street protests, which left 10 dead. The U.S., the European Union, and a host of Latin American nations condemned the vote as an attempt to create a one-party state. The U.S. has gone a step further, initiating sanctions against Maduro personally, putting him on par with the rulers of Syria, North Korea, and Zimbabwe.
Maduro is not just a bad leader, he is now a dictator. The United States stands with the people of Venezuela in the face of this oppression.
Maduro has shown no inclination to compromise with the protesters or the U.S., responding with mockery.
I don't take orders from the empire. Bring on more sanctions, Donald Trump.
The sanctions against Maduro are largely symbolic. Sanctions against oil exports could devastate Venezuela's economy, but are risky. Oil sanctions against Venezuela could raise the price of gasoline in the U.S. and create thousands of Venezuelan refugees.
All right, that was the report from yesterday, the update on Venezuela. That was Steve Harrigan from Fox. This is Sandy Rios back with you. You might recall that it hasn't been that long ago that we were doing an interview with a young Venezuelan named Enrique Altamari, who was visiting in Washington. We had a long conversation with Enrique because he was 25 years old, and he described to us the conditions in Venezuela, you know, passionately, how his father had suffered, his business, how he'd watched the decay of his country. And the dissolving of what was once such a strong and powerful economy into just nothing, and people starving, not able to get the basics. It's a very emotional interview. And by the way, we'll put that back on our Facebook page so that you can, if you missed it, this is something that you want to hear. I just think we need to have our finger on the pulse of what's going on in Venezuela. It's very instructive. If nothing else, we need to be helping them, but it's also instructive for us as to what happens when democracy crumbles. You might recall that in that interview, we had another person who was quiet, but he added some really good things, but we didn't feature him, although we could have. His name is Dr. Paul Coyer. Paul is a professor at the Institute of World Politics, but his background is just fascinating. He's covered foreign policy for Forbes. He's mostly talked about geopolitics of Eurasia and the activities of major Eurasian powers around the globe. Also, he served as a research professor, at the Institute of World Politics in D.C., a professor for what is France's version of West Point. He has degrees from Yale, London School of Economics, and we could go on and on. He's been a visiting scholar in European, Russian, and Eurasian studies at the Elliott School and at George Washington University in D.C. He has a lot of knowledge about China and many nations, but Venezuela. He's an expert on Venezuela for a very different reason, because Paul's wife, a professional musician, is a Venezuelan, and Dr. Paul Coyer joins us this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Sandy.
Oh, all right. Let's start with this. We talked, you know, with Enrique about this big vote coming up, and I want you, if you could, to explain what the vote, I believe on Sunday, was about. What exactly was at stake, and what were the people voting for?
Well, that's a good question, though, and especially the way you worded it. What were people voting for? One of the big issues is, did anybody actually vote? First of all, what the vote was taking place about was Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, is seeking to rewrite the Constitution. Now, this Constitution is one that was written actually in 1999, right after Hugo Chavez first took power. And despite that fact, was not a bad Constitution. It had a lot of democratic protections written into it. Nicolas Maduro wants to rewrite that completely now. He wants to take over control of every part of the government, including that pesky parliament, the National Assembly, that's controlled, the only part of the government that's controlled by his opposition. He wants to neuter them, and so he wants to rewrite the Constitution and rule through a constituent assembly of 545 hand-picked deputies, including his wife and his son, therefore, he will completely do away with the National Assembly, the parliament, and will have complete dictatorial powers. There'll be nothing to stop him. So that's what the vote was about. Does the Venezuelan people, do they want to do that or do they not? Clearly, they do not. That's why the opposition, 2 weeks prior, on July 16th, had the constitutional right to call a public plebiscite or a public referendum on issues of major national importance, and this certainly qualifies. And right. So they did on July 16th. They had 7.6 million Venezuelans come out and vote, all of whom voted, I think 99%, voted against the government. And they voted on three questions. One, do you support Maduro's attempt to rewrite the Constitution and rule by executive fiat? Obviously, no. Number two, do you think that the Venezuelan military, which is the biggest reason why Maduro can do what he wants, because he has complete monopoly on coercive force. So the second question was, should the military help the opposition in writing the Venezuelan constitutional order? And number three, do you support what the opposition is attempting to do in focusing on the existing constitutional freedoms that Venezuelans ostensibly have and trying to strengthen those and take back power from Maduro, which has become a dictator. People overwhelmingly voted in favor of the opposition. Again, 7.6 million people voted. That's more people than voted Maduro into the presidency.
Wow.
After Hugo Chavez's death in April 2013. So when I my wife's family and friends sent us videos at the time, again, 2 weeks ago, and you could see lines of people that were literally sometimes a mile long waiting to vote. There was so much enthusiasm for this vote. And, of course, the Maduro government called it illegal. It wasn't illegal. The parliament has a constitutional right to call such votes. Now, fast forward 2 weeks to 2 days ago, and the vote there, of course, remembering that 7.6 million number of voters from 2 weeks ago, Maduro claimed 8 million voted for his constitutional assembly, which was ridiculous, because if you compare the videos from 2 weeks ago to the videos from this past Sunday, nobody was voting. Even around this corner from Miraflores, the presidential mansion, nobody was voting. And there are 2.8 million state employees in Venezuela. Maduro's government threatened all of them. You will lose your jobs, your government-supplied housing, your food, everything, unless you vote for the government. So about 2 million voted for his constituent assembly. Not even all the state employees were willing to be coerced into voting for the government. That tells you something.
It's just amazing, Paul, to watch. We've seen this before. We've seen people struggle for freedom, whether it was in Eastern Europe or Russia, whether it was in Cuba. We've seen people lose slowly, have their freedoms decayed. I know you do, in Cuba, the Cuban people rose up, and we the United States promised we would help, and then pulled out the last minute, and that created the Bay of Pigs incident, in which there was a terrible loss of life and really loss of heart, I'm thinking, in terms of fighting back Castro. The people were determined to be free in Cuba, but they lost, and now they've been in decades of oppression. And that's, I think, what we all fear is let's talk about something that Enrique said that really stunned me. He described to us that the military, question was asked, wouldn't the military, because they have families who are Venezuelan, wouldn't they side with the people at some point when they see their own people starving? And Enrique told us, I'm sure you knew this, Paul, that so much of the military are Cubans. They're not Venezuelans. Just talk about that for a second.
That's correct. Yeah, he's absolutely right. And one thing that has not been one major issue that has not been given enough attention is that issue of the role that Cuba is playing in supporting this complete imprisonment of Venezuelan people within their own country. There are various estimates as to how many Cuban security personnel are in the country, but the most realistic ones that I have heard from friends who I trust in their estimates are that about 60,000 Cuban security personnel, that's intelligence operatives, that is bodyguards, that includes bodyguards for Nicolas Maduro. We don't have any way of knowing for sure because of the opaqueness of the Venezuelan government. However, there is good evidence to indicate that Nicolas Maduro doesn't even trust Venezuelans to protect him anymore because he knows how unpopular he is. And his bodyguards are purely Cubans. And it's not just that. You see the colectivos, the people on motorcycles out there on the streets, suppressing the dissent on the part of the young, actually Venezuelans of all ages. And a good percentage of those are Cubans as well. And as you just indicated, nobody knows better how to repress their own people than the Castro brothers. And they've got decades of experience doing it. And they are harnessing all of that experience and all that muscle power in Venezuela because Cuba's getting a lot out of Venezuela. Cuba is like a parasite on Venezuela. And they've been running the country from Havana, basically, ever since Hugo took over in 1999.
Yeah, I mean, it really just sickening. It really is just sickening, Paul, on a human level. I can't help but respond emotionally because it's just such an outrage. And, you know, starving the people so that they don't even have the energy to resist what's happening. And the murder rate, we talked about the incredible amounts of brutality and nobody being held accountable. The dangers of it, it's just incomprehensible. Two men were dragged, of course, from their bed and arrested in the last 24 hours. Do you know anything about those men?
Yes. Well, excuse me. What we know from a video that I believe the daughter of Antonio Ledezma, the mayor of Caracas, made as they were dragging her father off in his blue pajamas. That really shows, the picture is truly worth a thousand words, and it really shows the dictatorial nature of the regime. Leopoldo Lopez, the same thing happened with him, as you just indicated. And, of course, on July the 8th, the government, the Maduro government, made big news by showing supposedly how merciful it was in letting him out of prison and letting him go home, still under house arrest, but letting him go home. And, of course, they did that only because at that point it was 8 days before the opposition's vote, and the government wanted to try to tamp down the virulent opposition to it from the public at large and wanted to try to show itself in a good light. It was a cynical move. And which is shown right, by immediately after the July 30th vote, what do they do? They arrest him again. I don't understand why they think they can get away with it in terms of the diplomatic strategy they're pursuing, because everybody, with the exception of Evo Morales in Bolivia and Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and a few tiny little Caribbean states that are dependent upon Venezuela not calling in their debt, and oil that they get from Petroquerribe, just a very few are not condemning in the OAS Venezuela's actions. But the OAS has finally, in the last year, started to take more aggressive stance as well. Yesterday, we saw several ambassadors, including some from Europe, France, Britain, and Spain, I believe, sent their ambassadors to the National Assembly building to show support for the opposition, as did Mexico. So they're becoming increasingly isolated within the region. But again, it's that monopoly and coercive force, the support of the military, and also the support of all those tens of thousands of Cuban security personnel that allow Maduro to have the confidence that he can maintain power in the face of overwhelming public opposition.
Just a programming note here. We're going to take this segment, I'm telling my guys back in the studio, a little bit 5 minutes longer than we were planning to, if that's all right, and because we're not finished talking about this. Paul, the assembly, the assembly of the people, the opposition, they ended up, look, the assembly was not formed to be opposition. The assembly is constitutional, but it was populated by the opposition. So as of Sunday's vote, it's illegal. So what are they doing? Are they still meeting or have they disbanded?
They have not been formally disbanded. They are still officially holding their constitutional positions. Supposedly today was the day that we were expecting Maduro to install the new Constituent Assembly. We have yet to see whether or not that's going to take place. It is now first thing in the morning on that day. So that remains to be seen. That may be postponed by a couple of days. We're not sure. When Maduro does do that, there will be a new outbreak of street demonstrations and of violence, because people are going to be enraged by this.
You know, President Trump and our State Department issued sanctions on President Maduro. I use the term loosely. The bus driver Maduro, mm-hmm. who's the dictator. The dictator Maduro.
Right.
Sanctions on him. Now, I've heard conflicting comments about that. Is that effective or not? He didn't seem to think so. He mocked it, in that news clip by Steve Harrigan.
There are two aspects to that question. One is it effective in terms of, does Maduro actually have financial assets that are under U.S. jurisdiction? And nobody knows the answer to that question that's not within the Treasury Department right now or within the U.S. government. I don't know the answer to that question. We just don't know. If he's anything like Hugo Chavez, and we know that he has probably squirreled away a lot of money that he's embezzled from the Venezuelan people. Whether that's in the Caribbean someplace, in a banking haven, that would be the most likely place. I don't know. Now, in the case of Tarek El Asami, the vice president who we sanctioned in February, who the Trump administration sanctioned in February, he actually had about $600 million worth of assets under U.S. jurisdiction that we could freeze, and we did freeze that. So in his case, it was effective. In Maduro's case, I think the effectiveness is more related to a shot across the bow, which Trump reinforced yesterday, the Trump administration did, by stating that he would hold Maduro personally responsible for the health and safety of Leopoldo Lopez, Antonio Ledezma, and of the other opposition people that he has that he's detained. And in my mind, at least, that is meant to bring to Maduro's awareness Manuel Noriega and Operation Just Cause in Panama in November 1989. Now, the world has changed much in the last 28 years since this, so it's, you know, we are not going to invade Venezuela. But I think it was meant to remind Maduro that we do have ways of harming your interests if you continue down this path. And this is just the first step. So I think this is more of a symbolic move. But I think the Trump administration is going to have many further steps in the near future if Maduro does not change his course. It's clear that he's not going to.
Well, I was very appreciative of the statement that said, further, we don't want to do anything that would harm the people, because you know their hearts are so harmed already. They're so weakened, and they need courage. And I was really grateful that the public statement said, we don't want to do anything that would harm the people. I would think that something like that would get back to them and they would be encouraged at least a little bit. Paul, what do you think?
Well, that's the debate over whether or not we should have more broad-based sanctions against PDVSA, the petroleum, state-owned petroleum company, and against and harming Citgo's operations in the United States as well. Citgo is the American branch of PDVSA and has ownership over a number of refineries, 9 pipelines, I think 2 refineries, 9 pipelines, and several dozen oil platforms in the U.S. And the debate has been, do we really crack down on Venezuela's, one of its few remaining avenues for earning foreign earnings, which is through its sales of oil through PDVSA and Citgo? And, you know, doing that, is it going to harm the Venezuelan people as much as the Venezuelan government? You may recall that Enrique and I discussed that briefly with you about 3 weeks ago. And Enrique's view, and I share that, is that at this point, it's going to take a bit of pain to cut a cancerous tumor out of Latin America and out of Venezuela. And that cancerous tumor, of course, is the increasingly authoritarian regime of Nicolas Maduro. And it's going to take pain to get rid of that. And if the pain necessary requires those sorts of sanctions that cut off that flow of money through PDVSA, then that's what needs to take place. It probably is going to harm the Venezuelan people to a degree, but the problem is, as you've alluded to, they're already starving. They already have no basic consumer goods, and they would want to see us do something. I would think the vast majority would support such a move.
Paul, do you have confidence in the people advising the president on Venezuela?
I do. We've heard a lot about, and there's some truth to this, about the slow pace of the administration staffing up, and that is very true. However, the consistent moves that this administration has taken and the personnel that have been behind those moves since January 20th have been very, very encouraging. It was in, I think, 3 weeks of the president taking the reins of government. I believe it was on February the 13th. We already had issued our first major sanction against Venezuela, which was against the vice president as a narco trafficker and some of the people around him. And we've now had 3 tranches of sanctions, including the ones most recently announced against Maduro and a couple of others. So far, they've been doing a very, very good job, even with not a full spate of personnel that they should have in. So whoever is giving him advice in this area so far has done a good job, and he's been following it. And you can see a stark contrast between the American influence under his predecessor, President Barack Obama, and now under President Trump. Under Barack Obama, we had a trip in 2016 where Obama, as you know, went down to Cuba, had a picture taken of him trying to hug Raul. Raul kept his arm from around him. Another photo op with Obama in front of a picture of Che Guevara.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
You know, and then he goes to Buenos Aires, and Obama told a group of students there, it doesn't matter whether you favor free markets or socialism, whatever works best for you.
Oh, wow.
Very different message than we're getting under President Trump.
Paul,
President Trump has supported those American champion norms.
We're out of time, Paul. I'm going to have to say goodbye so quickly. Dr. Paul Coyer, Institute of World Politics, will put his latest articles on Venezuela so that you can read them, and the post will be up today. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Thank you so much. Sandy Rios.
While evil people and imposters will go on from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Famed atheist Richard Dawkins was disinvited from an appearance on a regressive radio station in Berkeley, California, as they denounced him as Islamophobic. Dawkins called Islam the greatest force for evil today. When confronted, Dawkins doubled down, saying, "I have indeed strongly condemned the misogyny and violence of Islamism, of which Muslims, particularly Muslim women, are the prime victims. I make no apologies for denouncing those oppressive cruelties, and I will continue to do so." Islam, the straw that broke the regressive camel's back.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is David Barton of Wall Builders. Happy 40th anniversary to American Family Association. Wow, what a pioneer they've been. 40 years ago, who was thinking about things like transgender or same-sex marriage or anything else like that? And yet, American Family Association was on the front edge of protecting those values that we now fight for today. And they've been successful in it. Whether it's been through what they do with entertainment or what they do on radio or what they do even with young people and tours in Washington, D.C. So happy 40th anniversary to AFA. Keep up the great work.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson delivered very conciliatory remarks regarding North Korea. It's the latest instance of a now familiar pattern. First, President Trump takes a relatively robust position about a foreign policy challenge, then Secretary Tillerson says basically the opposite. Perhaps this is a good cop, bad cop routine in which the commander-in-chief and his top diplomat wage a carefully choreographed psychological warfare campaign to induce a recalcitrant opponent to change its behavior. An alternative description seems to fit the facts more accurately. President Trump is being systematically undermined by a Secretary of State who disagrees with his position not only on North Korea but on others such as Qatar and Iran too. The president has lately been reprising his most famous role on The Apprentice. If Mr. Tillerson is actually sabotaging Trump policies, he should be told, "You're fired." This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know, Frank is right about that. Sandy Rios back with you. Man, there's a lot of bad things happening in the national security appointments of President Donald Trump. I actually hope to do a whole show on this, but I'll just say that I have an article. I have three articles in my hand in relationship to this that I want to go into with more detail. But no, I can't go into it all today. But one of them is entitled "Revolt of the Generals: The Narrative Driving the National Security Train," and another one talks about McMaster's ousted Trump advisor who tried to free Obama holdovers. The swamp is now in full control of the NSC, the National Security Council. And we heard earlier, I told you that there is a word that General McMaster is leaking to acting FBI Director McCabe, information out of the White House. It was McMaster who fired this Derek Harvey, who is the gentleman, among other things, is against the Iran deal. He also was against all money going into the Palestinians that was going to some suicide bombers and others. So he is at odds with McMaster, and also it seems as though Tillerson has the same battle. Tillerson has a very strong relationship with Erdogan, the president of Turkey, who is an Islamist. And Tillerson's countered President Trump's wishes and the stated purpose of isolating Qatar, who has been supporting so much terrorism, and then Tillerson comes in and counters that. So it's a very serious problem. We've got Tillerson, McMaster, and even General Mattis, who are on a different team. The people they've brought in are either Obama supporters or Hillary supporters, and their policies are very different. And I have to say, John McCain has been right in the mix of all of that. In fact, I believe I told you several months ago, McCain had made some comment about how they were going to control Trump in a different way. And so he's been in the thick of this, and it's not a nice business. And so we will come back to that, I promise. We just talked to Dr. Paul Coyer about what's going on in Venezuela, and it certainly is dreadful, which reminded me of a clip just came to my attention this morning. This is Bernie Sanders.
You know, it's funny, sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food. The rich get the food and the poor starve to death.
All right, you can see in this video, this is Bernie Sanders in 1985. So Bernie Sanders is a communist. I mean, they say socialist because that softens it. He's a communist. He spent his honeymoon in Moscow when Moscow was deeply controlled. It was the Soviet power, the communist power when he had a honeymoon. And not anybody, you have to understand, not just anybody could go into Russia. It wasn't until the early 90s that Americans started going into Russia pretty freely. It was a big deal. So he goes and has his honeymoon there. Here again, what he said, let me just set it up. We just talked about Venezuela is being overtaken now piece by piece by Maduro, who has become a dictator. The people are starving. They're waiting in lines for toilet paper, for food, for necessities. I remember this happening in Russia. I remember the Russian people standing in line for bread, you know, just for anything, for food. And this is what Bernie Sanders has the gall to say. Listen again.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food. The rich get the food and the poor starve to death.
In his twisted universe, it's good to line up for food. So he's not out of his mind. He knows exactly what he believes. He's just very deceptive. So we've got all these young people, millions of them, in this country who think he's the best thing since sliced bread. And if they could only understand that what Bernie Sanders wants is something like Venezuela. It is not going to be pretty what Bernie Sanders and others, Barack Obama included, Hillary Clinton included, would take this country through in order to achieve power for themselves. These are the kinds of things, the situation in Venezuela, that spell it out in living color. Can you not see that when you lose freedoms, it's not just that you can't choose everything, it's that you lose even your ability to have good. There's no health care in Venezuela. People are dying from the simplest things. No medicines. This is what powerful, evil people do when they get control. And so Bernie Sanders, that's just amazing. We'll put that clip on our Facebook page so you can watch it and share it. Now, back home, I have to address this before I run out of time here today. Bret Baier was interviewing Kelly Conway last night. This part I wanted you to hear.
When will the White House issue guidance to the Pentagon on the transgender ban?
That is coming. And as you know, the president last week made known what the policy will be. And he's expected to issue the guidance, issue order. And he has promised, he has pledged, as those other stakeholders have, Brett, to work together to actually implement the policy.
All right. So yesterday, I mentioned that Charles Krauthammer had sort of, I think I said this yesterday to you, but if I didn't, I will repeat. The night before, when this issue of the transgender tweet and the ban came up, Charles said that he laughed and he sort of thought it was, I think he did not mind the fact that the generals in the Pentagon sent out a very I thought, very disrespectful response to Donald Trump's tweet. Very unmilitary-like. And then Charles made the prediction that nothing would ever happen on this. It would just go, it would just die. And I said, no, no, it won't. There's no way that President Trump is going to let this issue die after he issued this, even if it's just a tweet. And so I was comforted to hear Kelly say what she said last night. But I want to give you a follow-up. Out of military.com, it's the Daily News, a commandant for the Coast Guard says, I will not break faith with transgender Coast Guardsmen. So he says he has no intention of leaving transgender Coast Guardsmen out in the cold. He spoke at the Center for Strategic and International Studies on Tuesday morning. Admiral Zunkuft, his first action upon becoming aware of Trump's tweets was to have his office reach out to all 13 members of the Coast Guard who have self-identified as transgender. And I don't know how many of them are in transition, but could I please add that this means full removal of parts, full addition of other parts. If you're a man, removal of your Adam's apple, removal of your beard, the facial beard, putting in, I don't know how they do that. But, I mean, it is several surgeries. It's very expensive, courtesy of your tax dollars. And while these guys are having all these surgeries, they can't fight. They can't serve. And we're supposed to pay for this, and we're supposed to feel ashamed that we are against this. By the way, there are two other four stars and former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who are also condemning the president's actions. Army General Martin Dempsey, retired Navy Admiral Mike Mullen, both of them have supported transgender service members. Of course, both of them served under Barack Obama. What damage he has done to our military. And so then along comes this other story. More than 50 retired generals and admirals from every branch of the U.S. military penned a letter yesterday condemning President Trump's upcoming ban of transgender troops. I do notice in this article I'm reading to you, it doesn't list the names of these people. So officers, you know, who are these officers from all the branches of the military? And they say this proposed ban, if implemented, would cause significant disruptions, deprive the military of mission-critical talent, compromise the integrity of transgender troops who would be forced to live a lie, as well as non-transgender peers who would be forced to choose between reporting their comrades or disobeying policy. It would degrade readiness even more than the failed don't ask, don't tell policy, and on it goes. You see where this is going. But I remember the president's tweet made more sense in, 42 characters than any of that. He says, our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. I want to add Linda Harvey, who is one of my favorites, has written an article on WND, a really great article called Military Gender Rebels, in which she lays out even more reasons why this is not a good idea. We're going to put this on our Facebook page so that you can read and share Linda's article. She talks about, she says that people can still, everyone can still serve their country. They just can't act out on all their behaviors and still serve, just like people who, I don't have time to develop her thoughts about this, but it's a great article. Maybe if we have time, I'll get back to it tomorrow. We have so much to cover each day, and you can imagine there's so much news. And I am honored that you listen every morning, and I do my best to bring you the most important parts of the news and the insights that I have from the various things that I know. And so thank you so much for listening. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.